This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. How Sound is a co-production of PRX and Transom. I'm Rob Rosenthal. There are two things I want to mention right at the start. First, this episode of How Sound features a story from Love and Radio. So, of course, there's some edgy subject matter that might be an issue for younger listeners or adults. You know who you are. The story from Love and Radio is called A Girl of Ivory, and that leads me to the second thing I want to say. Spoiler alert. I talked to the story's producer, Nick Vanderkoek, about a major plot twist in this piece that gives the whole story away.
That is a move we could not pull off in any other medium.
And trust me, the move is a good one. So if you haven't heard A Girl of Ivory and you don't want us to spoil it for you, go listen and come back. loveandradio.org. Otherwise, we're jumping right in.
The club is called City Club. My friends and I would go, like, every Saturday night. It's in a Ramada Inn building. I want to say it's in the basement. The walls are black, but there's, like, white paint everywhere, and there's black lights everywhere.
A Girl of Ivory opens with Dave Catt. He's the main character, and Dave Catt is dancing at a bar.
Anytime a Joy Division song was played, I was out on the floor. Bauhaus, Every Day is Halloween by Ministry. Jesus Built My Hot Rod by Ministry.
I was dancing to a song called Jesus Built My Hot Rod in the middle of the dance floor. And I saw him a little bit away from me. I couldn't stop looking at him dancing.
A woman spots Dave Catt and she's interested. Dave Catt spots the woman. He's interested.
She had this like kind of top split down the middle, stockings. At the time she had all purple hair, PVC bustier, arm length gloves, 6-inch stilettos, also PVC. And a Hello Kitty headband. Okay. This is like, goodness gracious.
They make their way to each other and start talking.
The first thing that he said to me was, have you got a cigarette? Which was really weird because I wasn't expecting him to be a smoker. So I was like, are you sure? I mean, he was kind of like coughing and spluttering and I was like, are you okay? And he was like, yeah. He was like, can I have your number? I thought, yeah, I really want to give him my number, but I'm not going to immediately do that because it would just be really obvious that I like him. So I was like, I don't know my number. And he was like, yeah, you do.
I did lean in and I was just gazing into her eyes and then I kissed her. And it was what I expected, yet not what I expected.
Dave Catt called her the next day. Her name is Sidori, by the way.
It was great to meet someone who was just themselves and was a nice guy, which he genuinely is a nice guy. I think some girls keep going for the wrong guys, but I had only gone for the wrong guys because there were only bad guys around. As soon as I saw him, I was like, okay, I'm not going to let you go.
Between like meeting at City Club and like her moving in, there really wasn't a lot of time.
Was that an adjustment in the relationship, like actually living together?
It wasn't so much an adjustment really, because I think we had gotten so comfortable with each other. You know, nothing really had changed at that point. We're so compatible for each other, I guess.
As Dave Catt says, they really enjoyed each other's company, and eventually they fell in love.
It was in autumn.
Yeah, it was a week before Halloween. It was raining, not raining heavily, but just kind of lightly outside, and it was one of those nights where you're really glad to be inside and warm and snuggly, and he put on this film called Playtime.
In this moment, watching the film, Dave Catt never felt so content, and Sidori felt the same. They were perfect for each other. So, of course, they married. Enter Elena.
My name is Elena Vostokova. My friends call me Lenka. I live most of my life in Vladivostok in Russia. It was a hard town for me to live because I was bisexual in this town and my mother doesn't know this.
Now, I should tell you, this is not the twist, or I should say it's not the twist in the story, but Elena is definitely a major turn.
I needed to get far away to have a life I want. I've always wanted to go to America. I used to go on the internet and look up the style, fashion, music. I came across this documentary, these alternative couples. This couple, I just love them so much. I never seen anything like this in the world. They were beautiful people. They were interesting. They had interesting ideas, and they were funny, and they were laughing together, and I loved them, and I saw them on this video, and I thought, I want to be with them. I want to be with this guy, this girl, and I think I fancy them both, okay? So I emailed them. I said, I want to live with you.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Elena came to the United States not just to meet Sidori and Dave Catt. She wanted to move in with them. And did.
I'm here.
Yeah, no.
Hi.
She did say that. I'm here. We went into
in his bed.
Yeah.
I sat in his bed ready and you got me all dressed up.
Yeah.
With my makeup on.
Hi.
Yeah.
Does the issue of jealousy come up?
You mean Sidori jealous of me?
Or anyone jealous of anyone. I mean, it's sort of...
We have had to work out some things along the way.
I think the only time we had to all kind of be honest with each other was perhaps when, I can't remember when it was our wedding anniversary, and that brought a bit of stuff up to the surface, and I think we all dealt with it pretty well.
What happened?
It was hard for me because it was a wedding anniversary and I don't have one. It's a very special thing for two people, and there's something that Dave Catt and Sidori have together, and I don't have a wedding anniversary. And I think I was too emotional for this, and it wasn't fair for Sidori, and I'm sorry, I was mean.
Elena and Dave Catt and Sidori are all in love with each other. Elena understands that Sidori and Dave Catt are married, but they still all are able to enjoy each other's company.
I'm just not clear on the logistics of it, like who sleeps with who, like when, like, well, how does that all work?
Each of us sleeps with Dave Catt.
Alternately, we not sleep together at the same time. And me and Sidori grab time together whenever we can,
mm-hmm.
when Dave Catt is at work,
mm-hmm.
when Dave Catt is in the bath.
He knows. He's cool with it.
He don't mind us. And usually I sleep with Dave Catt because my joints aren't as stiff as Sidori.
Mm.
I want to make sure you caught that. She just said...
My joints aren't as stiff as Sidori.
Mm.
Well, here it comes, people. The twist.
See, that's the thing. It kind of works to our advantage, though, because I say she's the mistress because Elena is more built for sex,
mm-hmm.
whereas Sidori, with her stiffer joints, although they have loosened over the past 5 years, she's more built for love. She has very, as you can see, loose joints. I mean, where... You lift her hand and it doesn't stay. I mean, you can barely, like, turn her hand.
Mm-hmm.
Her hand will not.
Yeah, sure.
Her fingers are actually kind of broken at this point because the wires that they use in the fingers are not as strong as they could be.
Mm-hmm.
But because they've all broken at, like, the base plate in her hand, right, which is right here. If you put her hand right here. But, I've always been intrigued by artifice. I remember distinctly being in second or third grade. My teacher, Miss Mahaffey, was standing at the blackboard writing whatever words in French. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, if she was a robot, what mechanisms would make her move her arm or her hand or her mouth or head, walk from the desk to the blackboard or whatever? I remember I was fascinated with that. It wasn't like a sexual attraction or anything. It was just like a fascination. There's an episode of a show called Ripley's Believe It or Not. You know, they detail all sorts of wacky stuff about, you know, Howard Hughes, the pyramids, the Winchester Mystery House, that sort of thing. They had one segment where they were talking about a humanoid robot that was made in Japan. This roboticist named Shuichi Mizuno had made a gynoid version, well, more like an automata, of Marilyn Monroe. She's wearing a blue dress and holding a guitar. Her head's moving and her lips are moving and she's singing a song. And I remember distinctly thinking that was like the most amazing thing I'd seen in my life. People always get fixated on the fact that I'm in love with dolls, which I am.
I'm going to end the excerpts from this episode right there because it's this moment, this flip in the narrative that I talked to Nick Vanderkolk about. I often think to myself after an episode of Love and Radio that the podcast should have a different name. It should probably be called Wait For It. I can't begin to tell you how many times I've been pleasantly duped by the weird reveals that propel love and radio stories. And clearly, this one's a doozy. Nick says if he was going to draw a diagram of the shape of a lot of love and radio stories, he would draw an Erlenmeyer flask. It's one of those flasks they use in a lab. I'm sure you've seen them. There's a lip or a flare at the top, a long neck, and then a pyramid shape.
So you start off with this little flare at the top, you know, hopefully something that is very arresting, that kind of teases things without giving too much away, and then sort of like a kind of a what the f*** kind of a scene. And then from there, we kind of often will back up, go into some of the more sort of nitty-gritty sort of biographical details of the person that's like maybe a little bit more boring but sort of necessary for a little bit of context. And then hopefully, if we're doing it right, or if we are working with the right story, it, you know, gradually builds and builds and builds.
Until at one point, the story expands outward, like the bottom of the flask. That's when the flip happens, and what the listener understands to be true is no longer true.
Like, basically, the crazier something is, the further along in the narrative, if you want to call it that. I want it to go as late as possible, so, yeah. It takes a little bit more work to get into, but I think it's more satisfying that way in the end.
When you're assembling a story, do you start with the switch or the flip, or I don't even know what the right word is, but do you start with that moment in mind when you're going to turn things upside down and then build from that?
In general, no. I mean, in this particular case, I mean, certainly that flip I was thinking about. I first interviewed Dave Catt late last year, and I have been thinking about that moment since, you know, of like nearly a year of what would go through people's minds, or what would the look on people's faces, you know, as they realized what the story was actually about. But in general, when we're first assembling a piece, we actually tend to be, you know, very, very conservative in terms of how it's structured, and so it tends to be, you know, far more in keeping with like the actual chronology of events, and I think that sort of gives you a better overview of the different pieces that you're working with.
In order to make the reveal in this story work, Nick had to create the illusion that Sidori and Elena were real women, not dolls. To accomplish that, Nick interviewed Dave Catt extensively about his fantasy world. He then auditioned two actors to play the dolls, Izzy Sudi and Joanna Neary.
I sent them clips of Dave Catt telling his version of how they had met, like the fictional version. And then they recorded, just like on their computers, they just recorded the same story, but from the doll's perspective.
Nick says a lot of Dave Catt's fantasies about how he met the dolls lack detail. For instance, there aren't a lot of anecdotes, just descriptions of what they look like. So Nick encouraged the actors to ad-lib.
I suggested to Izzy when you know, when you're recording this, let's like try to add a couple little details in there to try to get it to come alive and feel a little more authentic. And so I had this idea of like, you know, feel free to try out a couple things, but like maybe, you know, maybe he like is in a way to try and impress you, he bummed a cigarette off of you, but it was clear that he didn't smoke. And and I sent it to him just to kind of, you know, make sure that he's on board with this whole wacky scheme. And he says, "Oh, I love the cigarette anecdote. Like, I'm gonna incorporate that now. Like, it's canon."
That's part of his personal narrative now.
Yeah, exactly.
Nick liked what the actors did, so they got together to officially record the doll stories. And they used the same approach. Mostly, they riffed.
What you're hearing in the final piece is culled from, you know, five or six different improvisational sessions.
Can we go back to the beginning of the
the movie.
Mm.
Instead of it being, because I don't think he really describes it as like a thing that they do regularly,
uh-huh.
but as like one specific moment.
Sure. Okay.
Of, and I could even prompt you, and I like my, you know, my question could be on the tape too, of just like, is there a moment in that early relationship where
you thought
you really felt like,
yeah.
So we would just take it through kind of from beginning to end,
sure.
each time, and then sort of reassess and go, okay, you know, well, the jealousy thing seemed to be like too much of an issue.
So you don't all sleep together. Like, how does it work logistically? Like, do you split nights, or how does that work?
Well, Dave Cat sleeps with Elena more than me. Because her joints aren't as stiff as mine. I'm a bit stiff at times, aren't I?
Yes. Yeah, the wire in her fingers is gone. It's bad.
Not bad, but it's just
a bit floppy.
Yeah.
I think it's more of a positive spin, like, so, well, I think you should go straight into the, well, like, her designer Abyss Creations made her to be more poseable.
So we're really pragmatic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
sorry.
So it's not like, yeah, it's not depressing.
No.
It's just like, you're totally cool with it. You
yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Actually, the wiring being destroyed in the hand, that's actually Elena.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah. yeah.
We were also, like, trying to interpret, like, Dave Cat's thing. And you know, Joe and Izzy were both, like, wanting to feel very respectful to him, while at the same time, you know, having fun with it and getting a little bit silly or whatever, you know.
Go on, you tell him. I've got three tongues, and Dave Cat can change them whenever he likes, really.
Yeah, for different kissing. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Nick Vanderkolk is the producer of Love and Radio. It's part of the Radiotopia podcast network. I can't encourage you enough to listen to the rest of A Girl of Ivory. The second half is equally as fascinating as the first. loveandradio.org. At the post for this episode of How Sound, Nick talks about how he first got in touch with Dave Cat. Actually, you know what? Scratch that. I'm not going to save that for the website. Here's what Nick did.
I kind of figured that he had been burned a couple of times, you know, because it's such a salacious topic. So I was trying to think, like, okay, how can I get in this guy's good graces? And so I tweeted at his wife, because he runs a Twitter account for his wife, Doll, and I tweeted at her and I asked her permission if I could interview her husband, and she wrote me back and said, oh, I'll check with him, you know. And then he wrote me, and then and then I don't think I immediately responded to his email, and then his wife tweeted at me the next day and said, oh, I let Dave Cat know. I don't know if he's emailed you yet, but let me know if he hasn't. I'll put the thumb screws on him.
Even if I do say so myself, there are quite a few good episodes of How Sound coming up. On one show, This American Life's Jonathan Menuvar talks about collaborating with musicians to compose music for scoring stories. I also talked to one of the musicians he works with. Then there's an episode about starting stories. Jessica Terrell of PRX's podcast Offshore reveals some tricks for beginnings. And there's a really creepy piece about drowning. I guarantee you, you'll find yourself short of breath as you listen. So please, keep downloading How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. This podcast is produced by PRX and Transom. All hail John Barth, my editor at PRX, and WCAI, the public radio station in Woods Hole on Cape Cod, where I record my narration. I'm Rob Rosenthal. Thanks for listening.
From PRX. And Transom.org.